Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and tonight's conversation is with Admiral Jim Loy, Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard. Well, let me just loop back to Deepwater, because it does sound like a very special program. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, thanks, Paul. The program really will define, in large measure, the future of our organization offshore. We have currently coming off a number of assembly lines, just absolutely terrific products for our coastal responsibilities. We have new patrol boats, we have new motor lifeboats, we have new buoy tenders coming off the line that over the next 2 or 3 years will have been completed, and we will be in great shape in the coastal inventory. But it is this offshore inventory and our requirements to meet these threats that have emerged as transnational threats that's enormously important to the nation, and why we have focused on the Deepwater Project as being so important. One of the interesting aspects, for example, is that back when John Layman was Secretary of the Navy, he was talking about a 600-ship Navy. And the 40 or 50 hulls that the Coast Guard then was running were almost an afterthought in the cerebral context of a 600-ship Navy. But in today's Navy of 300 ships with 116 combatants and a build rate of 6 or 7 instead of the 9 or 10 that Admiral Johnson thinks that he would need to actually be building the Navy that he wants, now all of a sudden the 40 or 50 hulls in the Coast Guard, as a force in being available to the Navy in times of emergency, it takes on a totally different perspective and a totally different importance. And so 4 years ago, my predecessor called the then Chief of Naval Operations, Mike Borda, and said, we are looking to replace the Deepwater fleet of the Coast Guard in the next decade or so. It's enormously important that we know what kind of attributes the Navy would have us have and would have us build into that set of deepwater assets. So the Navy did a wonderful job of articulating those requirements for us, and we took those and built them right into the RFP that's on the street, that's currently being designed by the three consortia. So we will have met the Navy's requirements for this 40 or 50 hulls worth of force in being, if you will, when we are finished with our project. Most importantly, when the price tag, that going back to the $10 billion that you mentioned when we began this topic, that price tag got the attention of the folks in the Office of Management and Budget, as you might imagine. And so the president asked that we conduct an interagency task force on the roles and missions of our service as we look to the future. And they did about a 10-month review. The review was chaired by the Deputy Secretary of Transportation, the Honorable Mort Downey. And the results at the other end of the day are very revealing. We had, prior to this effort, conducted our own strategic vision outlook effort and presented that in a document called Coast Guard 2020. The great value of the Interagency Task Force was that they came to essentially the same conclusions that we had just reached within about 2 years before that. And those conclusions were that the kinds of things we do for the nation do project into the next century, that we are the right organization to do them. A couple of very interesting conclusions around the technology and agility of how we should be building things that can be adaptable to change over time, because that's been our history as an organization. And then lastly, they directly went to the Deepwater Project and said, it is enormously important that we recapitalize the Coast Guard's deepwater capability for this nation, and they used the phrase that it was a near-term national priority to do so. And secondly, that the project the Coast Guard had on the drawing boards was the right way to do that. So now we have these 16 signatures from all of our customers and stakeholders in the federal government having signed up for the importance of this project to the nation's future, not just to the Coast Guards, but to the nations as well, at a writ large, if you will.
Let me shift a little bit then and talk now about managing the Coast Guard. We know that it's an organization committed to increased accountability. I think in one of our first segments you even talked about this. How did it come to be that the Coast Guard would be one of the forerunners in being more responsive and accountable for performance?
Well, first, let me thank you for the thought process in the question, because I think that's very true. You may or may not be aware of a wonderful report card that we got in the Washington Post here just a little while back as the result of a of an effort that the Government Executive Magazine, in conjunction with the Maxwell School up at Syracuse University, had put together. And they gave us an A in a variety of different fields of management endeavor. And one of the two organizations that got an A for the effort that they had examined. First of all, the Coast Guard is a very operational service, so we can be accountable. You know, we can count up the drugs we seize. We can count up the number of lives we save. We can count up the dollar value of the property that we have saved in the midst of our hurricane relief operations. We can add up the number of oil spills that the nation is experiencing on an annual basis and make certain that over time, if our management is doing the right thing, that number is going down. And so we have realized in the last 4 or 5 years that as an organization, we have to invest very carefully in strategic planning, and we have done that. We have largely held on to the core of how one does business in this town over the years, as an adjustment from what Robert McNamara brought to the Washington D.C. world from the Ford Motor Company back in the early 60s, that PPBS system, the planning, programming, and budgeting system, at its core remains sound. But we had, as many other agencies I believe have over the years, encumbered it with all kinds of Christmas tree ornaments that really bogged it down. And so part of our effort in the last 3 or 4 years has been to totally redesign our planning, programming, and budgeting system to go back to the essence of the core of what McNamara brought to town, but to also think very carefully about these projective thoughts into the future of strategic planning. So we now have a very long period, 4 years now, of increasingly sophisticated performance plans and strategic plans that we have built. We have been part of Secretary Slater's work at the Department of Transportation, which, as you know, was the award-winning, if you will, dubbed the best strategic plan in government. And we would like to think that the Coast Guard investment several years before that had an awful lot to do with laying some of the groundwork that helped the department win those awards.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the servicemen and women under your command. Retention of personnel has been a problem for everybody in government, especially the armed services, it seems. What are you doing to retain your workforce, especially the very technically trained people?
On the military side, we are making every effort to stay abreast of the Department of Defense services with respect to the incentives and the bonuses and the kinds of monetary challenges and monetary inducements that can be provided to keep our young people satisfied with the work environment, if you will, of the U.S. Coast Guard and stay aboard. We have been working very hard on recruiting the last couple of years, but I, for one, in the midst of our efforts to do a good job with recruiting, have always been more concerned about retention. Because if we bring a new high school graduate or college graduate off the street into the service, to replace someone with 8 or 10 or 12 years of experience that just went out the door, you can imagine if you accumulate that over time, the net loss of capability at the people level that you have. And in the period from 1994 to 1998, when the Coast Guard ponied up to the task of reducing the total size of the federal government, we stripped ourselves of some 4,000 people with an imputed savings of about $400 million per year forever. I would be remiss if I didn't note that we probably went a little bit too far. And in our zeal to be good stewards and to meet the requirements of streamlining, we overshot the mark and ended up with ourselves short of the bodies against the billet structure that we were actually allotted. So for the last 2 years, we've been working very hard on restoring our workforce in numbers, knowing in advance that we had to work very hard in holding on to those technical kinds of folks that have the experience that we need today. Part of our challenge is a structural challenge associated with how the president's budget goes together and how the Congress appropriates money. For example, when the pay raise last year, largely well received, of course, by all people in military uniforms, when the president sent his budget to the Hill, it was a 4.4% raise. Congress appropriated eventually a 4.8% raise. So you can imagine we were between the rock and the hard place of watching this with great joy, seeing our people rewarded with a slightly larger pay raise, but having to eat it, so to speak, in the appropriated dollar value that we had actually already received from the Congress. So we focus on incentivizing our workforce to want to stay in the Coast Guard to do the business of very gratifying work. When you're saving lives, protecting the environment, dealing with migrants and those kind of things, we want the nobility of what we do for a living to be the gratification that keeps our people in. But at the same time, we want very much to incentivize them to stay as well.
Well, great. We'll be right back with more of the Business of Government Hour.